You're listening to ABC Wide Bay.
Well, the fight for biodiversity is on, and marine biologist and underwater cameraman Josh Jensen is leading the way. The Kalula Underwater Biodiversity Assessment is designed to investigate the goings-on under the sea and educate people on the species under threat. And Josh is with me now. Josh, what really sparked the need for a marine biodiversity assessment for Tin Can Bay?
Well, this is actually part two. The original one, there was a lady called Marie Pryor from Kalula Coast Care at the time, who's tragically passed away this year. But she, as a former counsellor and an avid diver and someone who really knew her way around Tin Can, when I moved up here, she invited me to do it. And so she put in a grant application with Gympie Council Environment Fund. Mm-hmm. And when that came good, it all began from there. And from the result of that first study, we've managed to get another grant through Lindy Orwin, who's taken over from Marie at Coast Care. And we're trying to look deeper into the problems that we found on that first one.
Okay. So just take us through the process for an investigation like this. How do you actually carry it out?
Just basically me and my boat guy, Graham Norton, who's a local of quite a long time. He really knows his way around. And he's also a drone pilot, which is handy when we're looking for places to dive. But basically, I spend a lot of time on Google Earth trying to figure out, and the charts, trying to figure out where the most interesting places would be. Mm-hmm. And then just jump in on scuba with lots of camera equipment and swim around till my batteries run out, basically.
Okay. Yeah. So how many dives did it take all up?
This one we had 29 dives, which was broken up into 12 urban creeks, or what we called urban creeks, 12 non-urban creeks, and 12 dives in each of those,
yeah.
And then 5 concentrating just on the mooring areas throughout the strait.
Okay. So what's the water clarity like in those areas?
Generally terrible. I usually go down at least every other day to check the visibility down at Snapper Creek, at the boat ramp there.
Yeah.
And if you can't see the bottom at the end of the boat ramp, then it's less than 2 metres visibility, and it's almost impossible to film fish, at least. There's plenty of, you can always get the seagrass and the snails and the things that aren't really moving, but as far as getting a decent look at fish, you really need at least 2 metres vis. And we were sort of settling for 1.5 in the end because there just weren't enough days in the year where we could get more than 2 metres vis. Mm. So it's actually quite hard to explain to people because it's so often most of the sand flats and things we're out boating on are less than that, especially unless it's a really full tide. And you can see the bottom crystal clear. You assume the water's crystal clear.
Yeah.
But that's actually only a metre. If you can see the bottom at a metre, then it's a metre visibility.
Oh.
And if from the boat, it's easy. You can see stingrays and turtles and dugongs and all sorts of stuff. But when you're underwater looking horizontally, a metre doesn't get you very far.
Ah, interesting. So is that a natural phenomenon or is it due to pollution? Or what's going on there?
A bit of a combination of both. Mm. Estuaries are typically not terribly clear. Got a lot of, obviously, coastal impacts, runoff and such, but there's also not a lot of water flow because, especially in Tin Can, we're sort of the dead end. So as water comes in from the ocean through Inskip Point, it goes down into the dead end, basically, south, and sort of bottlenecks up there. It doesn't move around very much and then flushes out where it came from. But there's no sort of flow-through effect where you would be getting clean ocean water flushing it through.
Yeah. Okay, so what were the major findings from those dives?
Well, I guess the upside is we found 325 species of different critters down there, and that's everything from seagrass, which we found 4 species, sponges, 34, things like that, so, the bottom-dwelling critters. 111 species of fish is probably the highlight. Pretty good numbers considering that it's an inshore habitat and it's fairly uniform.
Yeah.
It's Yeah, there's not a lot of variation in it like you'd find on an offshore coral reef, for example.
Mm-hmm. So that was some of the positives. What were the negatives?
That came from about 24 hours actual diving underwater and 7 hours of footage cut down to show something that's actually watchable by people.
Mm-hmm.
And, the highlight reel of 2.5 minutes, which is the thing I posted, which I guess is how you guys found me, that's pretty sad effort for that amount of diving to get that amount of quality footage, which isn't even all that high quality, if I'm honest.
Mm.
So really, there were just vast, vast areas of nothingness. And, I'd swim, on an average dive, I'd cover about half a kilometre. So we're drifting on the incoming tides and then just following whatever interesting topography or whatever I can find. And for the most part, there just wasn't any. The deep parts are too deep for the seagrass to survive, and they've all been either trawled or dredged at some point in the past. So, it's just not really coming back. There's little areas where there's oyster beds and things that you can see they were there once. There's piles of smashed up dead shells and things.
Mm.
So we know that there was a lot more there than there is now. And just to swim for sometimes 20, 30 minutes without seeing a fish in some sites, that was really, really sad.
Really, yeah, that's really disappointing, yes. So how does that compare to the last time there was an assessment carried out here?
Well, we did that 2 years ago, and that was focused purely on two sites, Norman Point and Ceres Ledge, which are really well-known local fishing spots.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is where Norman Point is where they're talking about putting in a new jetty to attract more tourists and fishermen and such. So it was a bit of an impact assessment of what might be impacted. Those sites, we didn't find as many species as we did on this study because we went into more habitats, but they were much fishier areas than the average of the inlet because their structure, and that's why all the locals know that that's where the fish are, because that's where there's a little bit of structure, and it's coffee rock. So it's very crumbly. You drop anchors on it and it breaks up, but it's still about the only habitat for the most part in the area that we studied.
Mm. So, Josh, we get a chance to see your video and hear your findings later this month.
Yeah, we've got a roundtable meeting of a whole pile of people that have been invited from the barnacles, dolphin folks, some indigenous managers from Butchala and also Cubby Cubby. We've got all the councillors hopefully coming along, especially the individual people involved in water quality and tourism, environmental special projects, all those dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Forestry guys, we've got houseboat people invited, marine parks. So that's all on the 28th, and hopefully I'll be able to get a few more answers out of all those folks. And then there'll be public meetings on the 29th and 30th of this month at Tin Can RSL on the 29th and Rainbow Beach Community Centre on the 30th at 6:30.
Okay. So what do you hope, Josh, comes out of an assessment such as this?
I really just hope people... Well, basically the problem that we have is that nobody sticks their head underwater here. Everybody looks at it from the surface and catches fish or not, and they think it looks pretty good.
Mm.
And when you listen to the water quality people, apparently the water quality is pretty good. So where's the problem? That doesn't seem to be one.
Mm.
Whereas from my eyes, actually spending all the time on the bottom, it's just absolutely carnage. There's little hope spots all over the place, which is great. But the bottom damage that's being done by anchors and bad mooring designs, there's still trawling going on. All kinds of bottom destruction is the problem at the moment. It was one of the many problems, actually. Erosion's another one that's, all the big seagrass beds that I remember when I came here as a kid, straight out of Tin Can, they're now sandbars because of all the sand that's washed off everybody's driveways and out of all the dirt roads and the dirt tracks and everything everywhere. So what I'm hoping is people will just come and have a look, be amazed at what biodiversity actually is there. There's still amazing things to see and amazing hope that, you know, if we just change a few things, stop trashing the bottom, maybe think a bit more forward thinking in terms of how we could change the thing without stopping fishing. There's no point. I'm not, you know, advocating for more green zones or anything like that. There's no point because they're not policed anyway and people are still fishing in them. What we really want is for people to be more aware of what happens when they drop an anchor or if they put an extra 10, 15 metres of chain on their moorings. You know, they're just causing these massive crop circles, essentially, of just barren dead zones. And if, you know, if one person drops an anchor once a year in a certain area, then that's it. There's no chance of recovery for that little spot. Yep. So, I just hope we get even half the turnout we got last time. It was standing room only at the RSL. So if we can, you know, get a lot of fisher folk in there just to see what's there, how maybe to make some really small changes, you know, just drift instead of dropping an anchor, use an electric motor if you can afford one, all these really simple things that could make an impact. And if we get enough people interested to form some sort of committee of action, we could really do something about all the derelict boats that have sunk everywhere, put them on the bottom where they can make habitat. Mm. You know, all the mooring chains that we would hope will replace with seagrass-friendly ones at some point.
Yep.
Rather than putting that in landfill, let's make a fishing park where all these things, these encrusted chains could actually be filtering the water and also attracting all sorts of fish life.
Yep.
And have the fishermen hook up to moorings instead of anchors.
Mm. Let's hope that change in thinking arrives sooner rather than later. Josh, thanks very much.
No worries, thanks.
Josh Jensen, marine biologist and underwater cameraman, and he's presenting the video and findings on May the 29th, Tin Can Bay RSL, 6:30 in the evening, and May the 30th at Rainbow Beach Community Hall, again at 6:30.